Let's do this, the Cult of Hockey podcast by the faithful and for the faithful. I'm David Staples of the Edmonton Journal, and I'm here today with Bruce McCurdy. Welcome, Bruce.
Hey, David. Podcast number four today.
Yeah, and hopefully my voice will hold out. I'm working on a cold, and I lost it there for a little while at the end of the last one. So we'll see what happens.
I figure if Zdeno Chara can tough it out, maybe we can too, right?
You know, that was always, when I was... My early days at work, I kind of had this attitude of no matter how sick I am, I'm going in. Like, and I got it from watching NHL hockey. So I could have like the worst cold on earth and I'd still be dragging myself into work. But I've shed myself of that idiocy because all you do is spread your cold around and spread the misery. So, but here I am I have a little bit of a cold, but I'm at home. So I'm not contagious to anybody but my immediate family. All right, Bruce, today we're going to look at who the Oilers should draft at eighth overall, Bruce. So one of the things I've done, I'm not any kind of expert at all at rating junior hockey players. If you go online, you'll see Oilers fans very passionately attached to this player or that. Mm-hmm. And the closer we get to the draft, people will become madly passionate about a player. And this happened, like my best recollection of this is the Nail Yakupov Ryan Murray draft. Mm-hmm. Where everybody, seemingly almost everybody who was an Oilers fan became mad about Nail Yakupov, including Daryl Cates, I think, by rumor. Mm-hmm. If rumor is true, became madly attached to Nail Yakupov over Ryan Murray to the, you know, it was like 90%, like you got to draft Yakupov. And we were all experts on Nail Yakupov. And we had all seen him, like most of us, like me, seen him four, five, six games. And Scotty Bowman compared him to Valery Harlamov, or Pavel Bure, if I recall correctly. and we were all wrong. And so what I would do following that was, well, I would try to watch at least four or five, six games of every player and try to rate them that way. And then I realized, like, you know, that was really misleading as well. Like, you can't watch a player three or four or five games and really have a very useful opinion on them. So what I do now, Bruce, is I don't try to watch these players. I don't trust watching. Like, the amount that I'm able to invest in each player is not enough time to properly rate that hockey player. You can't do it watching them five games on with bad, you know, CHL broadcast quality video and rate the player properly. Fortunately, there are people who are out there all the time seeing these players game in, game out. And what I can do, and what I've done this year at least, is take all of those guys, like, and I've got right now 14 of them, rating services that rate the players. And just kind of a matter of interest, what's the consensus view of those people in this draft? All those people who watch the players all the time, what are they saying?
Yeah,
and what they're saying is this: that there's two players at the very top of the draft, two forwards, Jack Hughes and Kaapo Kakko, at the top of the draft. There's a defenseman, Bowen Byram, who's number three. And there's a real consensus, I think, in this regard. And then there's a group of eight forwards who, it's funny, like on different lists, they're in different orders. But there's this group of eight forwards, and there's Bruce. Good luck picking who's going to be the superstar and who's going to be the dud in that group. Mm-hmm. There's about eight of them. And it looks like the Oilers are going to get one of those eight. Yeah. I don't know which one they're going to get, but they're going to get one of them. So what do you think? Do you have any favorites yourself of those eight?
Well, just first of all, just a general comment on the consensus of the rating systems. And I look a little bit askance at the unanimity in which, for instance, this year, Jack Hughes is rated ahead of Kaapo Kakko in 14 out of 14 ratings. They are one and two in that order. And, you know, what I've seen of the two guys, and a lot of that was at the World Championship, where Kaapo Kakko was a force for Finland that won the gold medal. And Jack Hughes was a part-time player for Team USA, didn't even dress every game, and they got eliminated in the quarterfinals. And let's just say I saw nothing out of that sample set that convinced me that Jack Hughes was a substantially better prospect than Kaapo Kakko. In fact, my conclusion was the opposite. and the Yakpa Fury that you mentioned, I wrote a similar post, the same style as what you wrote this morning, listing, I think, 10 ratings that time, and they all had Yakpa number one. And the year before, I did a similar thing with Ryan Nugent Hopkins. They all had him number one. And I wonder at what point it becomes a bit of an echo chamber. In the Connor McDavid year, yeah, sure, he's clearly number one. Jack Hughes is clearly number two. Or not Jack Hughes, not Jack Eichel, is clearly number two. And then the guys. But these other years, I mean, you could say, an Oilers fan could definitely say that the Oilers didn't necessarily get the top player in either of those 2011 or 12 drafts, despite what the rankings said. And that other strong players who were rated high but not as high turned out to be equally good or better NHL players, especially the Yakupov year, obviously, or Philip Forsberg, for example, went 11th overall that year. And you look in retrospect and say, well, how could Nail Yakupov even have been rated ahead of Philip Forsberg? Anyway, this year, it is what it is. It's pretty clear that Hughes, Kako, and Byram will all be off the board before Edmonton's turn at number eight, unless they do a very drastic trade up, which would be very costly because of the nature of those three. But then, like you say, there's eight guys, a bunch from the U.S. National Development Team, which has a fantastic program that's producing a number of high-end prospects now, and a couple of internationals and a couple of Western Hockey League boys. And they all have their appeal. And like I say, if they hold on to their pick and use it, it seems very likely the Oilers will be drafting a pretty decent forward prospect at number eight.
This is the thing. So one of the things I've been trying to determine is, like, what are your chances of getting – we all hope, you know, you're getting the eighth pick. Well, you're going to get a really good player. You know, you're going to get Jerome Iginla or Shane Doan or some really – really good hockey player. So one of the things I've done,
or Steve Kelly
or Jason Bond Sr., who is fourth overall. So one of the things I've done is looked at past NHL drafts, and what I found is a couple things. So one of the things you can look at is, like, is there really good draft years? Are there great draft years, or are there weak draft years? And what is this? The consensus from people who look at the drafts closely, like Scott Wheeler of The Athletic and Ryan Kennedy of The Hockey News, is that this is a pretty good draft year. So I'm going to take that as a kind of a, I'm going to take them like that they have a good sense of that. And what you find, Bruce, is that in any NHL draft, if it's a great, absolutely great draft, you're going to have about, at most, about 10 top line, number one deep pair, star players. You're going to have 10. Any draft will have only 10 star players in it. That's all you're going to get, at most, 10 star players. And I looked at the draft of history from 1970 to present. That's as good as it gets, unless you're there's a couple anomaly years, but I'm not going to get in. There were anomaly years because they essentially expanded the draft pool, so you could not just draft the best players out of 1 year, but out of 2 years, two out of two draft classes. But I'm not going to get – you're going to get 10 really good players, 10 star players. In a bad year, you're going to get four or five.
Right.
That's all the draft's going to have. And in what this year is, there's going to be, in this whole class of players, only seven or eight of them are going to be star players. Now, that doesn't mean they're going to be the first seven or eight players taken in the draft. And what you find, Bruce, when you're drafting eighth overall, a forward at eighth overall, and again, I looked at all these draft classes in all these years, is it's a coin flip. You have a coin flip with this pick. Historically, on average, it's a coin flip. Half the time, you're going to get a good or great NHL player. And half the time, you're going to get Magnus Pjärvi. You're going to get a mediocre or worse than Magnus. You're going to get a mediocre player or a dud, a total dud. So half the time, it's good. Half the time, it's bad. That's the history of drafting a forward with the number eighth pick. And I don't see why this year is. So there's these eight players. Let me just name them. Alex Turcotte, Dylan Cousins, Kirby Dach, Trevor Zegras, Vasily Podkolzin, Matthew Boldy, Peyton Krebs, and Cole Caulfield. Half of those guys on average are going to be really good players, and half are going to be mediocre players. Do we know which, who out of those eight?
Not easily. I mean, the four of the eight are from that U.S. national team. In addition to Jack Hughes, they had five star forwards who could easily all go in the top 10. and who's pushing who, who's driving the bus and who's a passenger.
Right? Does that give you pause with those guys, Bruce?
It does. I mean, is Cole Caulfield filling the net because he's a pure sniper? Is he filling the net because he's playing on a stacked team with great line mates and he's pumping in the power play goals? I mean, what little I've seen of the guy, he's a sniper. But does that translate into an NHL-level sniper for a pipsqueak guy like him? Hard to tell at this point. Somebody's going to roll the dice on him. Maybe he haven't.
That also gives me pause with those guys. Like, you know, Turcotte was injured, but his point per game this year was as good as Jack Hughes's.
Mm-hmm.
He's generally rated near the top of that group. Pod Colson was rated right near the top of that group. And now he's right at the bottom of it because he had a bad under 18 tournament. And it's interesting, Bruce, if you look at these ratings from the start of the year to now, man, have they ever changed? Like even the experts, like the people who are watching this all the time,
other than one too, yeah,
they are rocking it up and down. Like there's players who weren't on the list and who are suddenly on the list. Players who, so where's it going to be a year from now? Like in a redraft a year from now, I imagine it would change dramatically as well. So, man, the draft is it's funny because in some ways it's a crapshoot. You have this coin flip. But on the other hand, it's absolutely crucial.
Mm-hmm.
You know what really got me interested. In the draft this year, when I was looking at Ken Holland, his record as a GM, and whether he's a good signing or not for the Oilers, it just became so abundantly apparent that Ken Holland's rise and fall in Detroit was completely related to the draft record of that team. And the great draft record for the first 10 to 15 years when he was GM, and then the terrible draft.
Before he arrived as GM.
Well, before he arrived and then when he was GM, but he was director of scouting to give him credit. Right.
Yes.
And then the terrible draft record from about 2004 on in Detroit, or a mediocre record at best. It is so crucial that you draft well with your team. But on the other hand, it just seems like lightning in a bottle. Like it's just magic when you have those good draft records. And is there a rhyme or a reason to it? I can't tell you, although – you know, we've had 30 years of bad drafting in Edmonton, so we certainly don't, we know not what to do, but I don't know what that is. Like what?
No. Well, Ken Holland, whether Ken Holland knows what to do with the number 8 draft choice, I mean, Detroit was drafting in the 20s year after year after year. That Detroit was in the mid-20s or right towards the, you know, the very bottom of the first round at best. And they usually kept their picks, but I mean, they never picked somebody who was sort of NHL ready. And it's only really the last couple of years that Detroit was in the mix for a high pick. So
they took Rasmussen and Zadina, who haven't had like completely auspicious. They haven't been fresh out of the package, strong NHLers, put it that way, but they could still be that. So we'll see what happens. So yeah, it's a real mystery. Like the whole drafting thing, I don't know. My inkling is that what you need is a really hardworking young scouting staff to get it right. That's one of the things that's really important for a team. Is
young and hungry is not just an on ice, not just an on ice asset.
That's right. And probably every year you should be rotating one scout out of your. If you have like 6, 7, 8 scouts every year, you should be getting rid of one of them and bringing in a young guy. Would be my idea for scouting. So do you have any favorites, Bruce? I would say any irrational favorites, because I don't think, like, I don't know how much you've watched these players, but for me, it would be an irrational favorite.
Well, that's the thing. The only guys I saw in any real detail, I saw some of the U18s. That's where I got most of my view of the American guys.
Yeah.
At the Hlinka-Gretzky tournament last year, I saw the Edmonton group, which was Canada, Sweden. Mm-hmm. And I didn't see the Red Deer group, which was USA, Russia. So I didn't see Pod Colson play at all live or any of the American guys. As it turned out, I wasn't able to go to their one playoff game here. But Bowen Byram, very impressive and a bit of a wild card, but he's sort of a left shooting Cale Makar, near as I can tell. Like, you really don't know where the guy is going to be or where he's going to come from. You just know he's coming. But of the three, Kirby Doc, Dylan Cousins, and Peyton Krebs, they all impressed. And, you know, they're strong, solid players. Krebs had the kind of the strangest year in that he was a man stone alone in Kootenay. Like, they had a terrible team, just an awful team in Kootenay, and they had one good player. It was shades of Marc-Antoine Fouliot the year before Sidney Crosby came to Rimouski, and Oilers took him in the first round. Peyton Krebs, he was minus 50 this year. What does that tell you about his team? Top draft pick, top prospect, minus 50. Tells you he was out on the ice a lot, and he didn't have a lot of help. That's what it tells me. Cousins is and Doc are more sort of your prototypical big forwards. And Doc's got a lot of game to him. He's a right shot, and he seemed to have a lot of different skills at his disposal, and impressed me by showing up in the play time and again. But honestly, it's one of those situations where, you know, these are good players, and as you say, you're just praying that your scouts pick the right one. And even they don't really know who it is. They're just projecting. I mean, that's all we can do with any of these guys.
Yeah. So, Bruce, I had kind of a... So I was kind of, I was harboring an irrational hope for a while there that the Oilers would get one of Doc or Cousins, and that they would avoid taking Vasily Podkolzin. Mm-hmm. And here's what my irrational thinking was based on: the fact that I think that the Magnus Pjärvi, Neil Yakupov, and Jesse Puljujärvi the Oilers have spent really high picks on all those players, and not one of them has turned out. Puljujärvi still may, but just that thought. Well, these European forwards, it hasn't worked out in Edmonton for them. So,
well, I got two words for you there: Leon Draisaitl, who is a European forward, and if you say, well, he played junior, then I'll counter with Neil Yakupov played junior. So the ones that come straight from Europe, mm-hmm. I would put them in a different class, and that does include Pjärvi, Puljujärvi, and it would include Podkolzin were they to pick him.
And I would say that in Edmonton, we might have, anyway, so I wanted to test this irrational, mm-hmm. you know, test this thought, which I thought was probably irrational. I just wanted to have a look at it. So I looked at, since the 2000 draft, when you look at the forwards taken in the top 10 from the different leagues, who's panned out and who hasn't panned out. And it turns out, Bruce, that in that time, when you look at the Western Hockey League, mm-hmm. players who played in the Western Hockey League, who played their minor hockey in Western Canada mm-hmm. and played in the Western Hockey League, only one guy of all those forwards, and there's been 19 drafted, 19 players drafted out of the Western Hockey League in the top with a top 10 forward pick since 2000, only one of them has become an elite level scorer at the NHL level. Only one of the 19.
Wow.
And that's Ryan Nugent-Hopkins. Mm-hmm. Now, two other players who played their Western hockey, who played minor hockey in Western Canada, Danny Heatley and Jonathan Toews, are elite level scorers, but they went to play college hockey. So there's, when you're looking for guys who have become just average, okay players or dud picks, they're more likely with the top 10 picks at least to come from the Western Hockey League than they were to come from Europe. European players who stayed in Europe and trained in Europe tended to work out better. Mm-hmm. So it seems like NHL scouts tend to overvalue those guys in the Western Hockey League a little bit. They think they're going to do better in the NHL than they actually do. So that was a real wow. Like, that was me thinking, holy moly, maybe we should give another thought about Doc, Cousins, or Krebs, and maybe, you know, not be biased against Podkolzin. So I think the rational view is that, you know, they're all individual players, and some guys from the Western Hockey League, including Draisaitl, who came over as a European, and Nugent Hopkins, do turn out to be really good NHL players.
Well, even the Nuge, you know, I mean, you talk about him being an elite scorer. Well, this year, with his career high by far, 69 points, he was 52nd in the NHL. I mean, yeah. Depends on your definition of elite. I mean, to me, that's very solid, but I'm not sure I'd call it elite.
So I was going 0.7 points per. I basically broke them up into three groups, all the forwards drafted in the top 10. And if you're in the top third, I saw you as an elite scorer, then there's the middle section, and then there's the bottom section. So the players, in terms of getting the valuation right, NHL scouts, players taken from the OHL and the USHL, taken in the top 10, tended to turn out pretty well on average when it comes to point scoring. The OHL forwards taken in the top 10 picks, there's a real record of success with those guys, a real track record of success. And of course, this year, there are no OHL players.
Ooh, they're all WHL. The Canadian boys are all from the Dub.
Yeah, so the top-rated guys are not OHL guys. I mean, some people really like Philip Tomasino, but he's not seen by the scouts on average as being that kind of top pick. But there's lots of USHL players, so maybe there's some confidence in going that route. But I'm just talking on average, and individuals defy the odds all the time. And you can't say just because, you know, the lesson is just because Neil Yakupov, Nikolai Zhurdev, and Nikita Filatov didn't work out doesn't mean Vasily Podkolzin won't work out.
Right.
There's all kinds of good Russian players who get overlooked and are taken later in the draft. That seems to be one of the things you see. So it's just really hard. That's where I'm left with, Bruce, is just fingers crossed, and I hope they get it right, because it just seems to be hard to identify the right player.
Vasily,
you're drafting high.
He comes with a caveat that he's under contract for 2 years in the KHL, and apparently it's not one of those ones where they, with a nod and a wink, they can walk away from and go to the NHL. He's locked in there for the next 2 years. So the team that picks him will have to go in there with their eyes open, knowing that he's not going to be available to him for that time. And I would suggest he's going to drop for that reason, and he might drop to a stronger team for that reason and turn out to be a good pick for them. But I don't see the Oilers taking him. There's new regime or no regime. Their record in this century with Russians has been...
That would almost be an advantage with the Oilers that they can't get them over for 2 years, that they actually have to restrain themselves.
Let someone else develop them, right?
Yeah, because that would probably work out better. You know, Ken Holland has the overripe reputation, but, you know, Michael Rasmussen was in the NHL last year. It was the second year after his draft. Zadina saw quite a bit of some NHL time this year, and they didn't keep him in junior. They put him in the AHL. And so, you know, Holland, I'm sure they're looking for a player who they can maybe, if they think they could get him in the lineup this year, but maybe definitely the year after.
Yeah.
And I think that would stop the Oilers from drafting Podkolzin as well. But I think it's to Podkolzin's benefit that he gets 2 more years in Russia. Like, that's probably the best thing for him anyway. So that shouldn't be a detriment for any team drafting him. They should be thinking, well, he probably needs 2 years anyway. Like, let's give them that. But that's not how the NHL teams are going to think. Now, Bruce,
the other part of that is they're thinking 2 years from now, are we going to be able to get him then? Or is he going to be locked into the KHL and be, you know, one of these Radulov types that's happy to play in the other side of the pond?
Well, that's why they would have interviewed him and tried to get a good sense of that and get a good sense of the guy and what his goals are. Here's what I think they should do, Bruce, because there's this group of 8 forwards. Mm-hmm. So that takes you through the 4th through 11th pick.
Mm-hmm.
Let's say one of the teams drafting 9, 10, or 11 wants to, at number 8, thinks they can really get the guy they want. Unless the Oilers are absolutely certain, I'd like to see them trade down to number 11 or number 12 even. And I think they can probably get as good a bet to make it in the NHL with that pick as they can at number 8. And then they can pick up another pick. And the good news, Jonathan Willis at The Athletic did a really interesting thing where Ken Holland's made this trade a lot, where he's cashed in a higher pick, traded down a little bit, and got an extra pick. Because I think that's one way to try to deal with the chaos that you know is inherent in the draft, that you just give yourself more chances. You put more bullets in the chamber. And you give yourself more chances by making that draft, getting an extra draft pick, moving down a little bit, knowing that's not going to change much, and give yourself better odds by having more chances in the lottery.
Well, I remember 2003 when the Oilers did that. They moved down from 17 to 22, and they wound up with an extra pick, and they were able to turn those two picks into Marc Pouliot and J.F. Jacques. That ended well. Anyway, I mean, there you could find individual horror stories on either side of the equation, trading up or trading down. I hear you. My question is, if the players are in that much of a group, what would be the advantage to a team holding, say, the number 11 pick of trading up to number 8 and giving up another asset when they figure, if they figure the same, that the group of players is fairly similar? They'd have to have a particular player that they coveted that was still on the board at 8 that they didn't think would be still there at 11.
Well, what you're doing is there's going to be probably that team, though, that has that faith in their own ability to judge talent. And what you're doing is you're saying that faith is misplaced, mm-hmm. that the scouts really can't be that precise in their determinations. So you let that team pay the price, because because that's how human nature works. We think that we can identify that player, and especially when you've priced, watched these guys intensively over time. Now, maybe they're right. Maybe there is that team that has this unique ability to judge talent. But if there really is a group of 8 players there that everyone's mixed up on, and some have higher and some have lower, and that seems to be the case, then I think that you're wise to say, let's play the odds. Let's get one of these 8 guys, because they all have about the same odds if we're completely honest about it. And let's get an extra pick out of it and see how that goes. That's my thought. Maybe I'm wrong. Probably am. I'm always wrong about the draft.
So you're keep, hold, or fold. I guess it's not quite folding. You're not saying trade the pick outright. You're saying trade it down a little bit.
Hold and wait for the opportunity to trade down a bit in the draft and take that opportunity. That's my determination, Bruce.
Okay.
What about you?
Keep the pick, use it, get the best player available.
All right.
Don't believe Marc Pouliot.
Take Zach Parise.
Yeah, or who the heck was the next guy after?
Ryan Getzlaff?
Ryan Getzlaff was the next guy right after Parise. Man, so many good players that went around that time, and the Oilers didn't get any of them.
I mean, if you include Alex Newhook and Arthur Kaliev in that top group, and some people do, the group of forwards is even expanded.
Or Tomasino, who's gotten some rave reviews from some quarters.
Including our friend Sean Patrick Ryan, the Oil Knight. Like, just and when you look at the history of OHL forwards, on average, that's where the talent is. That's where the most sure things are, is in the OHL. And it's kind of interesting that there isn't a forward this year out of the OHL that gets much. That's really defying the odds that there isn't an OHL forward who's going to be really good. That almost never happens, that the OHL doesn't produce one or two or three really good forwards in a year. So the idea of maybe drafting down and taking Tomasino, I'm not against that, man. Like if Tomasino had been on that USHL team instead of Matthew Boldy, or if Peyton Krebs had. So I'm really open to the like let's get more draft picks idea.
And then the other wild card is this guy, Philip Broberg, defenseman. Now, some would say at this point the Oilers need is very clearly forward. They got a good depth of young sort of prospective level defensemen. Do they really need to spend another high draft pick on one after doing that last year? But Broberg is, he's got a range of opinions on him. I see Craig Button. My hat is off to Craig Button for having the courage of his convictions. He's not an echo chamber guy at all. His list is independent of the other ones, even though in this case he did have the 1-2. But he's got Broberg ranked number 7, so right in Oilers territory. And, he's just outside the top 10. But if you were looking at a defenseman, either him or Cam York, again from the U.S. development team, are strong-looking prospects. But I do think they'll take a forward.
Yeah, but someone else might take Broberg, which, again, if someone else takes Broberg, then that group of forwards, top forwards, you can expand your teams of trading down for and still get one of the top group. So and the final point I want to make on this multiplying draft pick strategy is the team that kind of led the way in this is the New England Patriots in the NFL, who are famous for this strategy of turning a higher pick into multiple lower picks. So that's, you know, I know every league's salary cap dynamics and, you know, the number of players that you need. But the NFL is kind of similar to the NHL in that you have like 21, I guess it's, what do they have, 11 versus 11, 21. You know, they have, in terms of the number of players who are on the field at once, the NHL has 18 players on the roster. All of them are pretty important, just like in the NFL. So, you know, I think that there's some similarities there. And I think that's a, I hope they explore that strategy. And I love Jonathan's piece. I thought the fact that Holland has, I think, the smarts to employ that strategy, he's done it a number of times, 5 or 6 or 7 times. That's really promising to me that they have a GM who realizes that's the way to go, because I do believe also that it's the way to go. So,
well, the Oilers did a big experiment in that back in 2013, the first draft under Craig McTavish. They traded the number 37 overall pick down for 3 picks, and then they traded the pick they got back, the second round pick they got back for that for 3 more picks. So it wound up basically being a 1-for-5. And good in theory, except for the 5 players that they wound up getting, Bogdan Yakimov, Anton Slepyshev, Jackson Hoke, Kyle Platzer, Aiden Muir, are all basically out of the picture at this point. And the pick they gave up turned out to be a guy named Willand Carrier, who's an actual NHL player right now. So you can trade for picks, and it's, you know, improve your odds, but you still got to make the damn picks, and you got to identify a guy that's actually going to be an NHL player. And this has been where the organization has fallen so badly short for too many years.
Yeah, without decent scouts, like you give those same 5 picks to, you know, to the try. Odds were that was the right move to make.
Yeah, I didn't have a problem with the trade. It's just the picks didn't work out.
The problem was you had Stu McGregor, who was not a competent, he was a below average NHL amateur draft guy running the show then, I believe. Now you give those you give those same picks to Keith Gretzky, who seems to, and Bob Green, who have done better in their time, maybe you get a better result. So that to me would be an exciting draft day. That's what I'm looking. That's, I guess, if I have an excitement on draft day, that's where my excitement will come from. It won't be like, oh, good, you know, Dylan Cousins fell to them at 8th. You know, he had been ranked number 4 all year long, or Pod Colson had been ranked number 3 all year, fell to them at 8. Like, I just don't believe in that anymore. I'm not going to get caught up in that kind of hype. My excitement will be, yeah, oh, they traded the 8th pick to the number 11th pick. And they got also the 38th pick, they already have that. They also got the 42nd pick in the draft because of that. That's what I want to see. So, Bruce, let's leave it there. Thanks for talking.
Yeah, thanks for listening, everyone.
And in the meantime, and in between times, this has been another edition of the Cult of Hockey podcast.